Is the covenant described in Hebrews 8 a brand new one or a renewed covenant, as it is in Jeremiah 31? Welcome to the Good Word. This week we continue our series on the New Testament book of Hebrews. I'm Alden Thompson, Emeritus Professor of Old Testament in the Walla Walla University School of Theology. I'm your host and study guide author. My conversation partners are Brant Berglund and Dave Thomas from the Walla Walla University School of Theology. And our topic for this week is Jesus, mediator of the new covenant. I'd like to go to the leading question, is it a new one or a renewed covenant as described in Jeremiah 31? And Hebrews 8:8-12 is a straightforward quotation of the new covenant promise, but by placing it in a new setting, Hebrews contrasts the old and new covenants rather than seeing them as complementary. In short, Jeremiah breathes continuity and renewal. Hebrews announces contrast and obsolescence. So let me come back to that leading question. Is the new covenant as seen in Hebrews 8 a brand new one or a renewed covenant as it is in Jeremiah 31?
We've kind of already set the stage, but I think when you go back to Jeremiah and you were to ask, did God want to write the laws on the hearts of Israel? And that to me is an important question. Was there anyone I can look at in Israel that had God's laws written on their hearts? I mean, when I go back even to the wilderness wanderings, there were a couple guys who made it out of Egypt and went into the promised land. It appears God's law was written on the hearts of Caleb and Joshua, but very few others wanted it written there.
Enoch would be another one.
I would say so, yeah. And so in a sense, just like Jesus' words, you know, a new commandment I give you, that you love one another. Well, that commandment had already been given, but it's being given in a new context. So maybe even some of the distinctions between Jeremiah's context and Hebrews' context isn't as clear as we'd like, because there are certainly similarities to both.
Yeah. And I've always thought of this as a refreshing of an already made covenant. I mean, it happened several times. Look at what happened after Josiah found, they found the
Book of the Law.
Yeah, Book of the Law. And I mean, I'm astonished when I read that they didn't even remember what it said. They were surprised to read it. And so there's a renewal there. At Sinai, there's a renewal. So I think it's this is a covenant that is being refreshed as time goes by.
And yet, Alden, you brought up the point that it is being contrasted in Hebrews with the old, yeah. And saying, look, you use some words in the study guide. Is this a softening of the blow, a cushioning of the transition away from the old Hebrew sanctuary where everybody put their identity right in Jerusalem? And there's probably a sense that that's the case. I think that you're onto something there.
Well, it's, and of course the perspective, and I want us to become familiar with the way you can take a passage and put it in an entirely different context. And when you do that, you need to lay them side by side, looking at the context for each one, not trying to harmonize them too quickly. And it's clearly, and what in Hebrews chapter 8, in the study guide, I point this out, and I'll just read it here. But Jesus has now obtained a more excellent ministry, to that degree he is a mediator of a better covenant, which has been enacted through better promises. For if that first covenant had been faultless, there would have been no need to look for a second one. And then this key phrase, God finds fault with them.
The people, right.
When he says, there's absolutely nothing wrong with the covenant, but it was the people. And so that sets him up for what we find in the New Testament in the book of Hebrews.
And that's the reason for the contrast.
Yes, that's the reason for the contrast. Now, I want to, and I've already alluded to this last week when I talked about standing in the sight of a God without a mediator, which is a passage that has really terrified many Adventists. It's from Great Controversy, page 425, and where Ellen White speaks there of standing in the sight of a holy God without a mediator. And when she penned those words, she clearly thought of them as a threat. And what I suggested when I told this story last week was that you could transform that threat into a promise. And I did it on the basis of John 6, in my own experience, on 16:25-27. And it's very intriguing when you can put those passages side by side. And as I've often said, that if you're half asleep, you listen to the passage, if you put the knot in, then it is Johannine theology. And I do not say to you that I will argue on your behalf because the Father himself loves you. When you put that not in, it's clearly Johannine theology. When you take it out, if you're half asleep, it sounds like Pauline theology. And I think we need to recognize that John and Paul do not come out sounding exactly the same. John is much more likely to feed in what is called the subjective atonement, where Jesus represents the Father to us, whereas Paul is much more likely to argue that Jesus presents us to the Father. Both are biblical, and I think we need to recognize both of them. Yet there's a powerful feeling in today's world that we all have to say things exactly the same way, and that's simply not the case that we need to be aware of.
Well, these are only two of the many metaphors for salvation, and thus, if we were to take all those metaphors and put them together, they all meet the great human needs, right? All of our different ways of thinking. And
now, we ought to simply open up the question a bit more to your own experience. Jesus as the mediator of the new covenant. If you just put it that way, what does that mean in your experience? And what have you said that meaning for that is in the experience of the church?
Well, we have alluded to this idea before that Seventh-day Adventists and most Protestants aren't comfortable with the idea of priesthood in an earthly sense. But if we read the Old Testament stories and then we see that Jesus fulfills a mediatorial role, you've mentioned how that was problematic for you, Alden, because of your view of God, you know, hesitant to forgive, but with Jesus, maybe he'll be convinced. And with Jesus, once he's God, this idea of a mediator, well, now we have both a human being in the presence of God speaking on our behalf, and we have God in the flesh in Jesus speaking for God to us. It's really the Greek idea of the logos, the intermediary between the world of the gods, which is somewhat inaccessible to humans, and humans that are flawed and sinful. But the Bible takes a different perspective of both of those. And it's, no, God can become flesh and people can be with God. Both of those are possible. My sin is not the end of the story. I'm not just flesh that's evil. No. So,
no, and it's once you discover that Jesus is fully divine, then standing in the sight of a holy God is not a problem at all, because Jesus is God. And he intervenes on our behalf.
And nor is the preparatory work that God does in the new covenant of writing his law in my heart. Yep. I have nothing to fear.
Dave, do you have any insights?
Although standing in the presence of God, if you read the Bible, is a very humbling and sometimes scary experience for humans. You find them often face down, fearing for their lives.
Yeah, as someone has said, whenever the angel appears in the Bible, their first statement is always, fear not.
Fear not. And yeah. It's for good reason.
For good reason.
Yeah.
That's right.
But that, I think, is because of the holiness factor. We don't understand holiness. Holiness is a moral purity that is it even shows in people's faces, as the case of Moses on Sinai. And so I think that when we encounter a holy being, we are very much intimidated by that.
I still think there is a huge contrast between the way God dealt with human beings in the Old Testament and the New Testament.
And the Old Testament needed to be shaken up a little bit.
Yeah, they did. And if you read Deuteronomy 5, where the people, after the mountain was shaking, they said, Moses, if God does this anymore, we'll die. So you talk to him for us.
Yeah.
And the interesting wrinkle, and I used to kid Malcolm Maxwell with this, because Malcolm Maxwell dealt with the Sinai, he had a very positive view of God, but wasn't always, it seems to me, straightforward with what the Old Testament says.
Yeah. You know?
And he would play with the Hebrew, you know, that there is no negative command. So the Ten Commandments says, you won't kill, you know, you won't steal, and so on. But I said, Malcolm, as you portray the Mount Sinai, you hear the melodious voice of God rolling down through them, and that's not the way the story sounds. When that happens, the people get really scared. And in Deuteronomy 5, the people said, we're scared. Don't you do that anymore. And when God heard it, he says, that's good. I hope that you're always scared. because you'll remember. And so it was a very positive thing that God was doing.
And I think of Isaiah in his calling, woe, woe is me, you know. Yep.
Well, and it's like a parent with children. You have daughters, Alden, and Dave, you have sons, and you don't treat them today as adults the same way you did as when they were 3 and 4 years old. And sometimes when they're 3 and 4, a little fear of running out in the road is a helpful thing.
Yeah, and Graham Maxwell used to use that. You know, and of course, the problem is with Graham is such a gentle person. Then the kids run out in the road, he has a hard time getting enough oomph in there. And he has them saying to the kids, now, if you get over there, you'll get run over.
Yeah.
And yes, you got run over. It's too bad.
Rather than the yell, stop, and grabbing them by the arm, even if it hurts just a little, to sure. prevent them from getting hit.
And there is an Uncle Arthur story, which is one that you may remember, where the kid was running down a steep hill with lava on it.
Oh, yeah.
And his dad said, fall down. And because he was trained to be obedient,
he fell down.
He fell down and then saved his life. See, so there are times where you have to be obedient. And although we want our kids, by the time they come to Walla Walla University, we want them to be able to think for themselves. We don't want them all standing up at College Avenue with their cell phones asking if they can cross the street.
No, we want them to be willingly compliant.
Willingly compliant.
The law written in their hearts.
Yes, yes.
That's good. So when we think of Jesus as the mediator of a new covenant, he is our representative, and of course the book of Hebrews knows that Jesus can do anything and everything, and he pulls out all the stops to make sure that that message gets across. This week our focus was on the new covenant passage in Hebrews 8 and the Old Testament passage which Hebrews quotes, Jeremiah 31, 31 to 34. In Jeremiah, it is a renewed covenant. In Hebrews, it is a replacement. Let's not try to harmonize them. Lay them side by side and learn from the differing contexts of each. Next week, our topic is Jesus, the perfect sacrifice. My thanks to my conversation partners, Dave Thomas and Brant Berglund, to our program engineer, Harrison Koschel, and to all of you for listening in. For the good work, I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.